Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. President Biden recently announced plans to withdraw U.S. forces from Afghanistan by September 11th. It has been 20 years since the U.S. invasion. According to the United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan, nearly 111,000 civilians have been killed or injured since it began recording casualties in 2009. The news obviously got widespread media attention, but most of the guests in the U.S. press were American and discussed the invasion and aftermath through a U.S. lens. On today's Your Call, we are having a discussion with three Afghan journalists based in Kabul. Tamanna Ayazi is a journalist and filmmaker. She started filmmaking in 2012 with the citizen journalism and filmmaking program in Kabul called Afghan Voices. She tells untold and unheard stories about Afghan women and children, education, war, and discrimination. Hi, Tamanna. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tina.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us. We are also joined today by Ali Latifi, an independent journalist, where he has traveled across at least 15 provinces to cover everything from drone strikes and civilian casualties to singing competitions and marriage costs in remote areas of the country. Ali Latifi's articles have appeared in many publications, including Al Jazeera and the New York Times. Hi, Ali. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you back. And Fatima Hosseini is an Afghan artist, photojournalist, curator, and exhibitioner. And I hope you can take the time to see her beautiful photos. We have a link to her work at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Fatima. Thank you so much for joining us. Hi, Fatima. Are you with us? All right. Well, we'll hopefully connect with her in just a minute. I just want to start off by asking all of you, as I said in the introduction, of course, Biden's plan got a lot of attention in the U.S. media, but most of the guests were American and talked about the invasion and aftermath through a U.S. lens. Ali, you write for many U.S. publications, and I just wonder, what are your thoughts overall on how this was covered in the United States?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, Fatima, yes. Hi, we can hear you. Thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank
Great.
You very much for
Good
having
connection.
Me today. Okay.
Thank you so much. And your work is so beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ali, do you want to take that question first?
I mean, if you look at Joe Biden's speech, he never actually mentioned Afghan civilians in his speech. I think he made a brief reference to the Afghan National Security Forces, but yeah, it was very much, you know, for his audience. And he's made that clear several times. Like during the campaigns, he had an interview with CBS where he said, look, I'm responsible to the people of the United States. And what happens in Afghanistan is not my responsibility. I also saw a clip of Rachel Maddow covering the withdrawal. And it was so interesting because in the end, you know, she kept talking about, you know, if you know anyone who is in the U.S. military who had served in Afghanistan, who had been, you know, affected by the situation in Afghanistan, now is the time to talk to them. Now is the time to reach out to them. And obviously to a U.S. audience, that's not, you know, improper, but it's also not the whole story. And it's not fair to the people of the country who will be, you know, who are left with the aftermath of the invasion over the last 20 years and who will be left with the aftermath of the withdrawal. And I think, you know, it is important for them, for these media networks to, it's not that difficult, you know, to get voices out of, I mean, you just got three voices out of Kabul in like 2 days of planning. So it is very important. And unfortunately, it's never really been part of the dialogue. I remember just a day after Biden announced his withdrawal, a friend of mine, she was contacted by one of the major U.S. TV stations to talk about the situation as an Afghan woman. And then they said, sorry, there's breaking news. We're going to have to cancel on you. So, you know, it's very telling about how much in the mind of the people of the United States this war is, that, you know, Joe Biden made this huge announcement. You know, he did something that three other presidents before him couldn't, And yet, you know, this major, you know, U.S. TV network felt like there was some other news that was bigger than, you know, speaking to a civilian, an Afghan woman about the fallout from it.
And Ali, as I mentioned, you've written for a number of U.S. publications. Do you get many invites to speak on TV or on the radio in the U.S.?
No. So it's you guys. And then in terms of television, it's almost always Deutsche Welle in Germany. I used to do lives for major, I don't know if I should name it, U.S. TV news outlet. And it's been at least a year and a half, maybe 2 years since they've contacted me.
That is Ali Latifi, an independent journalist based in Kabul. Tamana, what would you add?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you sound
yeah,
great.
Yeah, I would like to add that millions of ordinary Afghans' life and dreams were lost during this war, but no one is talking about it, and it's frustrating. Even Afghan media, so everyone is focusing on the peace process, but not what happened during this war and the people who are affected by the war. And the decisions are made from different sides. Everybody is talking about their benefits, their interests, not ordinary Afghans who are facing all the challenges during all this time. And as an Afghan woman, as a working woman, I am worried about the future of this country, about future of my career and my life. And it's not only me, it's other women. So I was doing stories and interviews in the past 2 months. And when I interview all working women, they talk the same thing. They talk about the same worries and concerns. So I think it's really nice to be here to at least express my feelings and then represent at least some of the women and journalist working in Afghanistan.
Well, your connection is amazing. I mean, there's no excuse for U.S. media not to find you all and, you know, elevate your voices. Fatima, I'm hoping we have a good connection with you. Let's try it. What would you add? I don't know if you heard that question, but what we noticed, and this is not just around Biden's announcement, but anytime there's a big announcement around Afghanistan, the guests are usually American and they talk about it through the lens of the United States. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Okay.
Oh, I think we have a bad connection. Maybe we can try reconnecting with you because... Yeah, I'm sorry, Fatima. We have a bad connection. Why don't we try reconnecting? Because we have a great connection with Ali and Tamana. So let's try to reconnect. Ali, let's spend some time really talking about ordinary... Oh, okay. Now you're back. Let's try again.
Okay, now it's good?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to say that, as you all know, these days Afghans are rightly concerned about the ongoing Afghan peace process, especially Afghan women and minorities are fearful that their rights and freedoms will be compromised over a possible peace deal with the Taliban. Actually, in Afghanistan, as a spine,
actually, I'm sorry, Fatima, we're going to have to try to reconnect with you because your line is going line is going in and out.
No
so
worries.
Yeah, we'll reconnect. Thank you. Ali, let's talk about ordinary Afghans. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous because these issues don't get that much attention in the U.S. But I mentioned the numbers from the UN assistance mission in Afghanistan. They began counting casualties in 2009. They put the number at 110,000 civilians. But when you look back at 20 years of this invasion, drones, contractors, how do you begin to even tell the story about how this invasion has affected ordinary Afghans?
Well, in terms of the UN estimate, and I think the UN would say this as well, you know, their estimate is, it is an estimate, and it is probably a lower estimate than than is the actual reality, because, you know, their system is that every casualty, whether it's an injury or a death, has to be approved by three different sources. And in a lot of places, it's very difficult to get. So that 110,000 since 2009 is probably only a small fraction of the reality. And then also when you have instances like drone strikes, airstrikes, night raids, things like that, like these things take place in, you know, rural areas that are difficult for people to get to, in areas that might be under the Taliban control. So for human rights workers, for media outlets to get there, it's real. By the time we get there, you know, the scene has probably already been cleared. And it's very hard to get actual proof of, you know, who was killed or injured in these sorts of things. And the same thing happens with a Taliban attack. So when we think of these numbers, we have to think of it as, you know, a lower estimate than is the reality. In terms of telling people stories, you basically just do what the three of us do. You know, you try and get out of the city and you try and go to different parts of the country and really just talk to people. It's not, you know, I mean, I think the U.S. media has that same problem, right? Because, for instance, in like the last two U.S. elections, people were saying how surprised they were because of like Trump support and things like that. And it was the same problem. You know, everyone was going to California and New York and these kinds of places and getting quotes and stories from people, you know, who have very sort of similar views. But very few people were bothering to go to, say, like Appalachia or somewhere like that, or certain parts of the South. And it's the same problem here. You know, if you're not actually going out and talking to people from different parts of the country, you're never going to get the full story. And so that's what the three of us do. And in terms of Tamono and Fatima's work, you know, it's even more powerful because they're documenting it visually. They're making videos. They're making, they're taking photos. Fatima's putting it on Instagram to more than 40,000 followers. So all of this has an impact, and it's not, you know, we basically just get in cabs and go.
Right. Tamana, what would you add?
I would like to add that, as Ali said, we are trying to cover as much as we can because we know that people are covering what they want to cover. But then as Afghans, we feel more responsible. And I'm trying to pitch stories that are telling stories of, like, ordinary people, especially in the different corners of Afghanistan. So, yeah, we are doing what we can from here, from but I think international media also should pay attention and then try to cover the reality to have like to have impact on decision makers' decisions.
Fatima, I think we reconnected with you, and hopefully we have a better line. What would you add?
Okay, it's better now.
Oh, much better. Yes, thank you.
Okay, perfect. Okay. For the first question, and now, I just wanted to say that Afghans are rightly concerned about the ongoing Afghan peace process. Especially Afghan women and minorities are fearful that their rights and freedom will be compromised over possible peace with the Taliban. And as you know, given the dark spirit, women and minorities are afraid that once Taliban are back through a power-sharing deal in the Afghan government's body, they will be, I mean, over everything about their achievements, about the gains of, the gains of the past two decades will be, overlooked or like a compromise over political settlement with the Taliban group. But among all uncertain things that are happening, as the U.S. and foreign troops withdrawal seems to happen anytime by the end of 2021, and the conference on Afghan peace process.
Sorry, Fatima, we're having problems with your line again. Sorry about that. We're connecting with Fatima Hosseini in Afghanistan. She's an Afghan artist, photojournalist, and curator. And sometimes the lines are just unpredictable. So hopefully we can find a better line with Fatima. We're also joined today by... Can you bring Fatima down? We're having a hard time with her line. We're also joined today by Tamina Ayazi, a journalist and filmmaker. She started filmmaking in 2012 with the Citizen Journalism and Filmmaking Program in Kabul called Afghan Voices. And Ali Latifi is an independent journalist. He's traveled across at least 15 provinces to cover everything from drone strikes and civilian casualties to singing competitions and marriage costs in remote areas of the country. And if you have any questions for our guest today, we were looking at all the coverage and noticed that most of the guests were from the U.S. and spoke through a U.S. lens. And so we wanted to talk about this with Afghan journalists. And if you have any questions for them, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Let's talk about the Taliban. In 2001, the United States sold the attack on Afghanistan partly in the name of women's liberation. And the Taliban at that point got a lot of attention. For a lot of people, it was the first time they learned about it. Ali, can you tell us, how did the Taliban turn out to be such a powerful player? And also, we just throw around the word Taliban. You've talked about this before on the show. Who are they exactly?
So the way they came to be was in the aftermath of the Civil War, which came after the end of the Soviet occupation. And so a certain sect of the jihadi leaders, about six or seven of them, they started a civil war in Kabul, wherein Kabul was ghettoized into different sort of like ethnic ghettos and these different armed groups, these different jihadi groups were fighting against each other, launching rockets across the city. They were accused of theft. They were accused of all kinds of abuses. And so in 1996, the Taliban started to take more areas of the country leading up to Kabul in 96. And they came under the guise of, we're going to get rid of these warlords for you. We're going to end your civil war. And we're going to make it safe for you to walk around the city again. So at that time, because a lot of people were so frustrated and so scared because of, you know, the rockets flying over their heads and the abuses by these different groups, a certain segment of society was like, okay, let them come. They'll at least deliver us from these people. What ended up happening is that they ruled the country for 5 years. And throughout those 5 years, they didn't let down on their very strict, very specific, very hardline rule, you know, as they, because in the beginning they were saying like, okay, we're not going to let women go out and work and go to school because of safety, because there were accusations of like rape during the Civil War, but they never let up on that. And then they ended up being just as abusive as the people that they took out. And, you know, as you said, for a lot of people, 2001 was the first time that in the United States that they heard about the Taliban. But the thing is like their rule, their strictness, their violence, their abuse, all of that was going on for 5 years. And nobody really paid. I mean, every now and then a camera crew or something would come here and make some kind of a documentary, but that was about it. You know, politicians in the United States, as far as I know, weren't specifically talking about it until 9/11. And then all of a sudden, all these politicians cared about Afghan women and the rights of the Afghan people and the destruction that was happening in the country. So, you know, it's really interesting that all of a sudden when they got attacked, they started to care about the rights of Afghan women and use that as an impetus for their invasion. While for 5 years, you know, what were they doing? In terms of who are the Taliban, you know, it's very difficult to say, right? Because obviously you have murderers, you have terrorists, you have suicide bombers. And then you have people who, for one reason or another, feel disenchanted or disgruntled at the current situation. And they pick up a gun and call themselves Taliban and say that they are protecting their community. And so the question is, how many of them are these hardline murderers who are, you know, committing suicide bombings and planting IEDs and, you know, just going after civilians. And how many of them are these people who feel, for whatever reason, that they needed to take up arms and by their own belief, defend themselves against whatever sort of abuse or disenfranchisement that they felt.
What would you add, Tamina, and what has changed over the last 20 years? We should say that the New York Times has reporters in Kabul, and they spoke to many Afghan women, members of civil society, journalists, politicians, and they said what comes next is whatever happens will not bode well for them.
Mm-hmm. To answer the first question about who are the Taliban, I agree with Ali, because I had interviews with some of them, with the local mm-hmm. Taliban, and what I got from them is the same answer. Some of them, they are protecting their people, their villages, but then we don't know who is the like the leader and who are the people who are really protecting the people, because there is corruption, police is not able to control the area, so they have to do something for the people because of other mafia around the country. But yeah, I think, and it is it has been discussed with other women also, like women's rights have been used and abused just to sell the war in Afghanistan. I'm not saying that there is no change in the past 20 years. You can see some changes in the big cities, but when you go to the villages, it's just still women are facing the same problems, even in Kabul. And also the Taliban. I feel like it's a label and people are using it for the benefit in different parts of the country differently. And it's not easy to answer the question, who are the Taliban? And then how Taliban became famous? Because of the corruption during Karzai period, and a lot of money came to Afghanistan, but then like right people were not in the right places. So they abused the power and the money they got. And then Taliban, they tried to gain trust of the people again. That's how they became bigger again. And the situation for Afghan women, I think there are a lot of uncertainty at the moment. Even myself, I'm not really sure, but I try to be hopeful for the future and try to do more than even like last year. But there's a lot of uncertainty and confusion around the country among women. Because they are not sure what will happen in the future. They are not sure if they will be able to work. They are not sure if their children will be able, especially girls, will be able to go to school. Because whenever this topic came up, there was no details. They just like, they're using women and their rights, as I said before, to sell the war and peace.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. That is Tamina Ayazi, a journalist and filmmaker. Ali Latifi is a journalist. He has traveled across at least 15 Afghan provinces to cover a variety of stories. And hopefully we have a better line with Fatima Hosseini, an Afghan artist, photojournalist, and curator. And all of our guests today are joining us from Afghanistan. We wanted to reach out to them because it is so rare to hear from Afghans about their own country in the United States. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan and the aftermath with Afghan journalists. Tamina Ayazi is a journalist and filmmaker. Ali Latifi is a journalist who's traveled to at least 15 provinces to cover a wide range of stories. And Fatima Hosseini is an Afghan artist, photojournalist, and curator. Fatima, let's try your line one more time and see if it's better. Are you with us?
Okay. Hello again.
Okay. I think the phone is much better. Okay. So please take some time and answer any of the questions that you'd like, since you didn't have a chance.
Sure. Okay. I just want to add some points, and thank you very much for having me today. And sorry for the network problems, as I'm not in Kabul, and I am a Tunisian in Bamiyan. So as you discussed, you know that Afghans are rightly concerned about the ongoing Afghan peace process, especially Afghan women and minorities are fearful that their rights and freedom will be compromised over a possible peace deal with the Taliban. And as you know, given the dark experience Afghans have from the Taliban regime, women and minorities are afraid that once Taliban are back through a power-sharing deal in the Afghan government body, they will be like, I mean, the gain of the past two decades will be compromised over a political settlement with the Taliban group. And among all these uncertain things that are happening, as the U.S. and foreign troops withdrawal seems to happen anytime by the end of 2021, and also, you know, about the Turkey conference on Afghan peace process, that it's like it was supposed to happen in the coming weeks, but still impending. But we really don't know what the future might hold for us. But as an Afghan, we're both hopeful and concerned over the ongoing Afghan peace process, and also or whatever will be happen after the U.S. troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. We are hopeful, and also I am hopeful, because there is no other solution to end the decades of conflict and war in Afghanistan except talking and engaging in dialogue to resolve our differences and conflict peacefully. But yet we are concerned that the rights of women that Tamanna John mentioned and our gains of the past two decades, like a compromise over a political settlement with the Taliban group, and overlooked and maybe underestimated. So, and as an Afghan artist who was born in Tehran and I came back to Afghanistan in 2018, as I said, I am also hopeful, but I am more concerned, because I don't want to leave Afghanistan again, and I don't want to experience migration and being a refugee again.
Mm. Mentioning these talks, the foreign ministers of Pakistan, Turkey, and Afghanistan have called on the Taliban to negotiate a settlement for peace. So just a few basic questions about this. Who are the people representing the Taliban in this process? Fatima?
They're political leaders.
Ali, go ahead.
They're political leaders who are in Doha, who have been in Doha since 2011. Several of these political leaders, you know, were somehow... at least one of them was detained in Pakistan. Others, you know, the question is like how much of a real control and influence do they have over the ground soldiers? How legitimate are they? How seriously are they taken? And how binding are the decisions that they make? Because so many of them have been so far from the battlefield for so long. You know, they've either been in Pakistan, possibly even in Iran, because both countries support the Taliban, either as in like in safe havens, or, you know, in the case of Mullah Baradar, in Pakistani detention. But I wanted Fatima to explain what it means that she's in Bamiyan and like what the situation in Bamiyan is like, because I feel like it's nice to get the perspective from another province.
Fatima, okay. Were you able to hear Ali?
Sure. Sorry, it was just a little problem with the voice. About the Bamiyan?
Yes, he said...
Yeah, tell them what it means to be in Bamiyan and what the situation is like there.
Okay, thank you, Ali. Actually, Bamiyan is a very peaceful province, and it's more safe even more than the capital of Afghanistan, Kabul. And honestly, when I am in Kabul, and then so many things are happening there, I just got a break to Bamiyan. So what will happen if all the provinces be like this, and I cannot ignore this, that it's also hard to travel to provinces as an Afghan woman. And you know that coming to Bamiyan by road is not safe, and you have to come with the, with the airplane. But in Bamiyan, there are so many potentials that, there are so many potential and so many things that we have to do to promote this province to about the tourism, about the inviting people out to show the beauties. And honestly, when I share the photos from Bamiyan, all my photos, all my friends and followers ask me, "Hey Fatima, are you really in Afghanistan?" And it's so shocking for me because no media, media never covered this part of Afghanistan. And I hope one day we all can travel to provinces, more easier than today. And also, you can see this peaceful and the safety all over the Afghanistan.
I just pulled up a map to get a sense of where you are, Fatima. So Bamiyan is about 3 hours from Kabul?
Yes, 3 hours by road, but with the plane, less than 1 hour.
You know, we're getting emails from listeners who just say thank you. They say they're learning a lot about Afghanistan. And, I think a lot of people just don't know much other than what we get in the media, which is just really devastating when you think about it, that the U.S. can bomb a country and the people in the U.S. don't really know much about it. And so, Ali, I was just looking at the population. There's about 38 million people in Afghanistan. Is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, if you have any questions or comments for our guests, three Afghan journalists, Fatima Hosseini, Tamana Ayazi, and Ali Latifi, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Tamana, it feels silly to ask such a basic question, but I think it's really important because you and Fatima really do this with your work. You try to really challenge stereotypes about what people have, especially about Afghan women. And sadly, these stereotypes still ring true. I mean, I was just reading a column from Maureen Dowd in the New York Times, which got shared a lot. I mean, in her third paragraph, she talks about caves in Afghanistan. So this is the kind of thing that we're still getting in this country. Can you just talk about the work you do to try to dispel some of these misconceptions? First Tamana and then Fatima?
Sure. So basically what I do with my work is like try to show Afghanistan through lens of an Afghan. And the Afghan woman, because we have so many journalists and filmmakers coming from abroad and making films, the films they want to show. But then what I want to show is the reality of Afghanistan. So I try to go to places others don't prefer to go, and I want to see people closer. I want to learn about them and tell their stories. And also women, yeah, as you said, and the article was talking about, it's not easy to work as an Afghan, but it's not impossible. So there are ways to work, to make films, or to tell stories from Afghanistan as an Afghan woman. Yes. This is from my part. Fatima John, do you want to add something?
Yes, thank you very much for this question. And it's a good question that I really, the concept of my words always focus on this. Because, as you know, I was born in Tehran and I grew up there. And the thing about Afghanistan, it was actually also was a name for me till 2013. But I just knew Afghanistan by the name, and also the war, the poverty, murder, everything like this. And when I was searching about this, about Afghanistan, I didn't see anything except war. But when I started to work on, as a professional photographer, the thing is that I started the photos with burqa, because whatever I saw, as a member of diaspora who was born in Iran, the poverty, I mean the gender inequality and these things in Afghanistan. And most, three of my photo collections are about burqa. And after my last exhibition in Beirut, I had another exhibition in Austria, and I decided to show another face of Afghanistan. And in that time, I was working on some collection to show the bright side of Afghanistan. And when the curator asked me, Fatima, please send the photos that you took with burqa, because everybody, whatever they know about Afghan women, is just like, this is the sign. And it was, in that time, it really hurt me, and it was so heartbreaking that what they know about Afghan women and what I know as an Afghan woman about Afghanistan. And that's why I started to work on the unseen portrait of Afghan women, or to show the bright side of them. And I have like three and four more collection about this part. And the thing is that the beauty of Afghan women has not been shown yet to the world in a major way. Amid all these miseries, there is another side of Afghanistan that everybody has to see, that media never cover that. And even a curator in Austria asked me to send the photos that all the media cover that. But I don't want to do that again. And I think this is the responsibility of the new generation to show the beauty of Afghan women. And when I had an exhibition in Beijing and also in UAE, even the ambassador asked me that, Fatima, are you sure all these photos, all these women in your photos are Afghan? They are not from other nations.
Oh,
and
wow.
I asked, why you think like that? You mean you have a very, what Afghan means to you? You mean we cannot have this much beautiful beauty in Afghanistan, or about these textiles, or about this framing, and about brave Afghan women, the courage, the brave Afghan women, and the loud voice that they can stand in front of my camera with all the problems and all the taboos they have and they face in Afghanistan, like the society, the family restrictions, and everything. But now I am working on the pure Indo-Eastern and the beauty amid war to make these beauties and to show these beauties and to create them in the middle of a conflict zone.
Mm. I spent a lot of time looking at your photos yesterday, and I love them all, but especially Pearl and the Oyster. Fatima writes, yeah, this collection highlights the beauty and femininity, and in specific Afghan women, and reflect on different faces of women usually seen as weak and as victims. I think that's just so, so important. And you can see Fatima's photos at yourcallradio.org. Fatima Hosseini is an Afghan artist and photojournalist who has had her work shown around the globe. Tamanna Ayazi is a journalist and filmmaker. She tells untold and unheard stories about Afghan women, children, education, war, and the environment. Ali Latifi is an independent journalist. He's traveled across at least 15 provinces to cover a wide range of stories. Just talking about telling a different side and to challenge stereotypes. Ali, you have told so many stories. What really stands out for you, and what are some of the other stories you're hoping to tell in the near future?
What story of mine stands out?
Yeah,
or,
when it comes to challenging these stereotypes and misconceptions.
I mean, I'll give you examples of sort of like what Fatima said about, are all these women really in Afghanistan? I think I get a lot of comments like that from editors. For instance, a few years ago, I had written a story about a young Afghan guy. He was like 20-something at the time. He was really into astronomy. He built his own telescope, and he was helping to reform the astronomy curriculum in Afghanistan. And the editor sent back a comment of, what do the Taliban think about astronomy? And I was like, oh my God. I was like, first of all, the Taliban has nothing to do with this. Secondly, like, Muslims practically invented astronomy. So I highly doubt that they care. And, you know, like it's constant, or like I had, I did the story recently about female social media influencers in Afghanistan, and I pitched it to a few different outlets, and, you know, one of them was like, well, it would be interesting, like, if their families kept them from posting photos or if the Taliban threatened them. And I was like, no, that's not the story, you know? And I was really happy the way it came out, because the editor, every now and then I did try to insert it, like, okay, like, this isn't every Afghan woman. There's a lot of challenges, you know, still in the country. And the editor, I was really proud of her. She kept saying, like, that's, everybody knows that, like, don't keep throwing that in there. Like, let's just make this story about these women and how, you know, adept they are at social media and getting, you know, like for instance, Fatima is a great example. She has what, like 40,000-50,000 followers on Instagram, you know, and her pictures and the story she tells, they're just about, you know, daily life in Afghanistan. And they're about like different people from different communities. So I think that is the problem, is that, you know, you can write a lot of things, but so much, you know, whether it was media based in Asia or in the West, they're so obsessed with this idea of Taliban, because just as like Afghan women are stereotyped as weak, you know, an Afghan man is stereotyped as a wife beater, mm-hmm. as a pedophile, as a warlord, as a violent person, you know, as basically a caveman, you know. And so I think what all three of us are trying to do is sort of, you know, there are a million challenges in this country, and we definitely cover them, but also sort of dispel some of those things and show, you know, different, for instance, like a few months ago during the pandemic, me and some friends, we went to Dar-e-Noor district in Ninghar province. And when we posted the pictures on Instagram and on Twitter, everyone, the same thing that Fatima, they would say to us, like, is this really Afghanistan? Like, where is this in Afghanistan? I can't believe that a place like this exists. Wow. So, yeah.
I mean, it's, I'm sorry to, you know, speak out like that, but it's just incredible to hear these stories. I mean, when you think about it, Tamanna, 20 years of war. So much has changed over the past 20 years. I'm thinking about a 10-year-old who was born when the U.S. invaded, a 5-year-old, someone who was just born, and now they're 20. And the world is so connected because of social media. Can you tell us just about young people? What do you hear from the young people that you interview?
From the young people, it's funny because I did interviews with the older ones, and then they asked me, and I asked them because I was born in this year, and then I was a kid when in 2001 when Taliban left the country, or like NATO came to Afghanistan, and then what happened during that time. So I grew up during this 20 year, mm-hmm. and I had the freedom, and then I studied at the American University of Afghanistan, and I was able to travel to all, like, almost like for too many countries. And then I was like people label you, especially in the villages, if you're able to travel to a lot of countries and then come back, because you have exposure of outside world. And then they ask you questions, and it's a different experience. And I can connect to the people who grew up during this time in the past 20 years. So yeah, I did interviews with some of the women, especially in Kabul and other provinces, and they're like, we have no clue about the Taliban, because when we were born, Taliban were not in Afghanistan. And we heard stories of Taliban during the Taliban civil war, during Mujahideen time, but that image we see is not a bright image, and we do not want to experience that. The things my parents experienced, I don't want to go back to that period of time. So yeah, they are really concerned about this. They don't want to become refugees because they are educated, like many of the people who are in their early 20s. They are educated, they have jobs, they have opportunities, they can travel, but they can come back to their country and they can work, they can make a change. But then if the Taliban come back, or if there is a civil war in Afghanistan. We don't know what will happen. And then that's why there is a lot of uncertainty. And they don't want to remain in crisis, their country in crisis.
Mm. Can I just give two examples about the youth?
Please, Ali.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in the last like 2-3 years, I was in Achin district in Nangarhar and Karabagh district in Kabul. And, you know, these are not fancy urbanites. These are not people who had access to a lot of the, you know, advancements and so-called gains of the last 20 years. But I saw young people who you know, for instance, in Achin and Nangarhar, who after the so-called Islamic State left, they were asking for their schools to be reopened. You know, young people were gathering, young men saying, we are willing, you know, to teach our children to make up for the teacher shortage. You know, we want our schools reconstructed. You know, we want our girls to get an education. Same thing in Karabagh district in Kabul, which is only about 40 minutes outside the city, but, you know, lacks a lot of the development. You know, children, boys and girls were studying, you know, in the dirt, under the trees. And a lot of their teachers were teenagers, 17, 18 years old, because they, you know, again, it's a district of Kabul, but they didn't have enough teachers and school buildings. So the young people who had studied ahead, they were the ones that had to make up for that shortage. So young people in Afghanistan, you know, like they're really working. They're really trying to bring changes to their country and to help with the development and the advancement. And it's not just in the cities, it's also in the districts.
Fatima, what would you add? Fatima, are you still with us?
Sorry. Yeah. Can I have your question again?
I was just asking about what stands out for you when you speak with and photograph young Afghans.
Okay. So, honestly, it's so hard to be a woman in such a conservative community and society like Afghanistan and to be a Kabul-based artist. But when you're an artist, you're challenged like, are more and more. But as an Afghan woman, artist working in Kabul, like, you know, when I was like in some streets that it took, like with a conservative community, as I said, like Ali knows about the photo I took in the bird market, where when you enter it to that market, to that street, you cannot see any woman there. And I came there with two other girls to take their photos and to show the beauty of the district, that it's all about men. And you cannot even see a woman, or if you see it with burqa. I mean, there were so many problems there. And as we had security guard was with us. But I mean, one of my mothers, like one of the shopkeepers, wanted to tease her, and also, I mean, the harassment, everything was there, and everybody was standing, like, behind me. It was like a cinema for them, and it was so hard to take the photos in that time. And also, even on the street, when I took the pictures, if you see a girl in a taxi in a very good area of Kabul, in Shahrnow, I mean, so many people were out, even they stopped their car to watch me and to see what I'm gonna do there, what I was doing. And when they see a woman with a camera in her hand, it's so like weird for them, that what are you doing? You are a journalist, so what are you doing with this girl? Why are you taking her picture? And also about the social media, I got so many messages that people blame me, that why you are working on a specific ethnicity that I never did that. And why you cover the women without covering their hair? Why you are taking the beauty of Afghan women and what you want to show? And most of them were Afghan men. And I don't know, I mean, a part of this society appreciate me and help me to grow up and to take more pictures and to show the more beauty of Afghanistan. But some of them really, they blame me and they took my energy, that why you are doing this, and if you do that again, like I was in if I believe it or not, I was in Kabul University because I taught there for like 1 year for 2 semesters. And one of my students in our faculty in Kabul University stood up and asked me about the photos that I took, a picture of a woman with the secret, behind the string veil with a burqa. And he told me, if my mom sees this picture, she will kill you. And I'm going to go out from this class. And I said, okay, go. You know, even in students in a very good university in Kabul, like, have this mindset still, and the Taliban is mindset still exists in among even young people. But still, I cannot ignore that so many guys appreciate me, even so many Afghan men appreciate me, and they really support me for my work, for my presentation, everything. And one of them is Ali.
Of course, Ali. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you all so much for joining us. We're getting a lot of emails from listeners who just wanted to say thank you, and they learned a lot. And we would love to have all of you back. Fatima Hosseini is an Afghan artist, photojournalist who has shown her work around the globe. Thank you so much, Fatima.
Thank you. It was so nice, and thank you for having me today.
Thank you. Tamana Ayazi is a journalist and filmmaker focusing on stories about Afghan women and children, education, and the environment. Tamana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Ali Latifi is an independent journalist. You can find his articles at yourcallradio.org. Ali, thank you. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you all, and I hope you can spend some time looking at their work at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Joanne Marr for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.